Welcome to a special edition of the No Dunks podcast. I'm Lee Ellis. I'm here with Tass, Trey, and the man making the magic happen, JD. If you're an NBA fan, then you're familiar with the work of our guest today, although you might not know it. He's been in the league since 1984. No, it's not Michael Jordan, although he's worked with MJ thousands of times. The game has been good to him. It's allowed him to travel the world, and he's been to every All-Star weekend and finals since 1986. And everywhere he goes, he always has the best memories because he takes the best photos. He is NBA photographer Nathaniel Butler. Nat, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, guys, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
So, Nat, let's start with what everyone's talking about right now, The Last Dance, because you're in it. You feature in it a couple of times there. We see you in those scrums there and huddles taking photos. But also, one of your photos is being used as the promotion. It's that one where Michael and Scotty are just about to dap up there. How cool is it to see some of your work used in a promotion for such a big event and a big topic that everyone's talking about right now?
You know what? It's always exciting to see your work being utilized. Obviously, all eyes are on this doc now because of who it is and MJ and the Bulls. The storyline is so compelling. Every day, every episode, there's a different storyline, and it's cool to see our photos used throughout the piece.
I'm sure it's bringing back a lot of memories for you, just being around the team and what that time was like. You know, being around those championship celebrations again, seeing Jordan and Phil and Scotty and that all together, what was your most favorite memory of that time, or specifically with Michael?
You know what? A difficult question to just have a favorite. I was fortunate enough to be around for most of those moments, and you're right, it just brings back a flood of different memories. For me, it was always fun, and I still enjoy it to this day, just being a fly on the wall, kind of, you know, as a fan. It's cool listening to the stories in real time, the guys rehashing, and then, you know, to be able to have the opportunity to document things has just been a pleasure for me. There was the scene of Michael in his hotel room on the couch smoking a cigar. He was saying he was, you know, a little tired, the wear and tear mentally, physically, and just, you know, I was in that room with, you know, two or three video guys, and just, you know, for the fan in me, it's exciting to be part of that. And then you look back on it 20 some years later, and you're documenting the history of the NBA.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one thing I wanted to talk to you about. We see Michael a lot in this documentary, you know, either on the court playing or in some sort of practice, you know, atmosphere, or he's in a business suit and he's trying to be professional and he's dealing with perhaps it's a sponsor or a promotion or something. But in that scene, he looks like a guy who's just exhausted, and he's just he's ready to sort of take a break from the game. And we don't see a lot of that. So, you know, when the cameras weren't rolling, you know, what was the Michael Jordan that you knew that we wouldn't see necessarily on this documentary?
You know what? He's just a good guy. Like, there were many times where we were there, and I had the benefit of, you know, tagging along with the film crew, and honestly, that made my job a little easier, because I was just tagging along. I wasn't the one making the arrangements or talking to him to set up, hey, Mike, what are you doing after practice? Can we come up to your room? You know, that type of thing that the producers were doing. I just, as part of the crew, oftentimes just tagged along. So for me personally, that made it a little easier. You know, I wasn't asking for favors or asking for certain things. I was just there. But it was just a good guy. And I think even to this day, I've been doing this for so long, I love those moments, whether it's in the hotel room or in the locker room, you know, getting taped before a game, getting his head together. He would have a cup of tea, you know, in the locker room. He would be in the training room getting, you know, your head together, your thoughts together. And it's just, you know, looking back on it, it's just remarkable the way mentally Michael in particular would prepare himself for every game or every practice or whatever, you know, he had going on, because you realize, I think, the mental grind of things. We all know how long the NBA season is, but mentally getting ready for those games and stuff, it's just remarkable to me.
Nat, you've been to every finals since 86, which means you were there for the first Bulls championship in 91 and then obviously again in 98. How much harder did your job get over that time span as Jordan's profile rose and rose to become a global superstar, one of the most famous guys on the planet by the time he retired for the second time in 1998? Was it getting tough to get access, or were you just lucky enough to have that backstage, basically that backstage pass to see the intimate moments of Michael's life? And I mean, was the crush just immense for you as well?
Yes, it was. And similar to you guys trying to get a soundbite from him instead of, you know, maybe 10 or 15 people huddled around him after a shoot around or after practice or after, you know, a media avail session, you know, by 98, there was hundreds of people around. So it did become more difficult just because of the sheer numbers mm-hmm. of people involved, you know, pulling up to the Berto Center or something for a Bulls practice. And you see, you know, five or six national TV trucks, a 60 Minutes truck, or this, that, whatever, doing, you know, covering Michael by that time. And it did become a little more difficult, a little more challenging. Like I'm sure you guys in the you know, print media and stuff can relate to all of that as well.
Well, you mentioned the mental aspect for Michael Jordan, how taxing it must have been, and being around him, you could feel that. You've also photographed a lot of the moments where the Bulls took it to the New York Knicks, and watching The Last Dance, I worry about the mental capacity of the New York Knicks. In your estimation, how many times do you think you photographed the Chicago Bulls doing serious damage to the New York Knicks?
Growing up a Knicks fan, I stopped counting after it became, maybe I ran out of fingers to count. But it is cool to look back on this stuff. They didn't roll over the Knicks, you know?
Mm-hmm, right.
The Knicks were tough. And I think in what is, was it the last episode or five or six when they said that the Knicks were, you know, one of their biggest challenges to winning another title. You know, I don't think people would say the Knicks were the second best team in the league, but they were right there, you know, and they're up the one series 2-0, and people always talk about the Charles Smith stuff. But there's, as you know, there's many aspects that go into the game. And that, to me, that makes it all the more compelling. 100%, I grew up a Knicks fan, a huge Patrick Ewing fan. I did a post the other day of John Starks of the way he's bodying up Michael on every possession. It's like the Knicks were as tough as they could get. Similarly, you know, they talked about you know, going through the bad boys. They finally beat Detroit. The Knicks were right there, you know, and you know that's sports. They were not able to get over the hump, you know. But I think, you know, in a different universe, a play here or there, who knows? You know, it's a different story.
One of the big topics that came out of the Last Dance episode 5 and 6 over the weekend, we saw about, you know, during that series in 93 when Michael went to Atlantic City, you know, it was a big story. He went gambling. You know, do you remember the feeling around, you know, both teams, I guess, at that time where, you know, perhaps Michael was showing that he's got a weakness and this was the Knicks' chance to win? I mean, they obviously went 2-0 up in that series before losing in six. But, you know, do you remember, was there a shifting, you know, feeling that perhaps this was the Knicks' time, that they were going to break through and finally get over the Jordan hump?
Yes, 100%. It's hard to speak about how electrifying New York was or the Garden was at that time. You know, those you know, Saturday, like afternoon, if it's Memorial Day weekend or something, a Saturday afternoon game, and then a Monday afternoon game, like the intensity and the excitement surrounding everything was all focused on those games at the Garden, you know? And yes, like, you know, you're a fan, you're rooting for your team, you're up 2-0, and you think maybe this is it, maybe this is it, you know? And, you know, they talk about that Starks dunk. Yes, the Knicks lost the series, but it's one of the most compelling moments if you're a Knicks fan. It's an unbelievable moment, and the ceiling of the Garden like blew off with the noise of the crowd at a moment like that, you know. And it's just exciting.
Yeah, so you know, when you're there to photograph, you know, take photos of the game, but you're a Knicks fan, it's a great series, you know, it's a great moment. Do you ever find yourself distracted just watching the game rather than taking photos? And has there been an incident where you're like, oh damn, I was just too busy watching the game rather than sort of trying to shoot the shot that was coming?
You know what, thankfully no, because literally, like, for me personally, you were in such a zone focusing on your job and the task at hand. Oftentimes during a timeout, I have to look up at the scoreboard to see the score. I like to, you know, you need to know, like, score, timeouts, how much time is left, things like the obvious like that. But I'm in such a zone when I'm working that I really, you can't allow yourself to get lost in the moment at all, because then you're screwed. It's too late. If you miss something like that, you know, a key play or something, then you won't be around too long.
Well, that's pretty interesting to say, because as a Knicks fan, you did get the John Starks dunk, and it did go on the cover of Sports Illustrated. When you see that, when you look back maybe at the end of the night and you see that you got the perfect shot of a huge, iconic Knicks play like that, are you cheering to yourself, or are you like, yes, this is awesome, I'm so happy that I actually got this picture of this huge moment?
You're always pleased. Similarly, like, not comparing myself to one of the athletes or anything, but you really have to not get too high, not get too low. You know, there are some games that you don't get as good a stuff as you had hoped. Like, you're not out there orchestrating, posing the guys. Sometimes, you know, a play like that, like, sometimes the referee, you get half their leg in the frame, or there's an ancillary player in the frame that sort of makes the picture less dynamic, you know. So obviously you are pleased, but you can't get too high or too low. And those days also we're shooting film, so you might think you have it, but you're not going to jinx it until, you know, the game's over, you go to the lab, and it's 2 hours later you see the film. It's not like the instant gratification of how it is with digital now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's been the biggest transformation in the business for you now, that, you know, everything is like that as soon as you take a shot. So what is the process, if you can talk us through that? You know, you take a photo, and then does it get instantly uploaded to, you know, a database somewhere, or do you have to go through a process to get those pictures available? Because oftentimes now, during an NBA game, if something happens, the photos are up immediately. So how does that process work?
Right. It's things have changed. Have changed tremendously, and you know, similar when you're watching a game and they're like, oh, let's go to Secaucus for the replay with the referees, all of our photos go to Secaucus. We have a photo department and editors working all night, going through our live, it's really live intake of photos. So that has changed a lot. It requires a ridiculous amount of preparation every game, because the cameras are all literally wired through an Ethernet to go back to Secaucus. Like, I go to a 7:30 game at 2:00 in the afternoon to prep and get all the cameras ready for that. But the difference is, as you mentioned, I press the button, and literally 2 to 3 seconds later, that image shows up in Secaucus to the editor, and then they can push it out on NBA social media. They push it out to the different teams, so the teams push it out. And it's funny, I don't have time to literally look at my cameras during the game, but all of a sudden I see my phone blowing up or something. If you get a shot and then it's out literally on NBA social media, who has 30 million you know, Instagram followers, and then my phone starts blowing up. No, not sick shot or something. And it's like, okay, I don't know. What are we, you know? So stuff like that is cool. It's an entirely different process than what it used to be with film, for sure.
So do you own your photos, or are they property of the NBA? I mean, you're working, I guess, for the NBA. So, like, would you be able to upload a photo yourself to your own social channel, or does it have to go through the NBA sort of approval process first?
You know what? Typically, it goes through the NBA first, and you know, NBA is always like we've worked together for a long time. NBA has a licensing agreement with Getty Images, where Getty licenses the photos out on behalf of the NBA. So typically, what I do is once a picture has already been out, then I can put it out on my, you know, my Instagram or something. Mm-hmm. But it's not really proper if I held it back and I put it out on my channels before it went out, because I'm working for the NBA and they're, you know, they're the ones that we're working for. So we have a very, you know, a very good understanding and relationship that way.
Yeah, you must have a pretty big catalog, though, I imagine, at home on discs and hard drives and things like that. Do you have any idea how many photos you have sort of stored, and if so, how do you catalog everything that you do?
You know what? It's a very good question, because again, going to film. Back to film with digital. Digital, it's very easy to make copies of things because you're just literally copying over a file. So I started. I was a holdout. I held out as long as possible because I just loved how the film looked. It was so beautiful. But I do have a great person that I work with. To help store things, everything, all of the digital stuff is very easily cataloged by game, by date, by player. So you can use different search tools. You type in a name and the images pop up. The downside with film, and a lot of the younger people don't understand, film is one of one, you know? So you take a picture, you have that piece of film, but then a client from the NBA wants to use that photo or something, they would send it to the client for this magazine, that magazine, whatever. And then you have to really put in a lot of effort to make sure that you get that back.
Right.
And it's harder to catalog because it's one of one. So that makes it a little more difficult with some of the older stuff, quite honestly.
Is there a missing piece of film that you wish you could get back that you've been trying to track down for any sort of time?
We're not going to go there because I'm having such a good conversation with you guys. A crazy story in general, though, and I'm sure you can relate to it. You guys have been around for a while. Back in the day, it was sort of frowned upon to have too much champagne and too many cigars and stuff in some of these celebration pictures.
Sure.
So a lot of that was literally thrown out because NBA wanted to, you know, paint this image of a more wholesome league. And you do understand it. And then literally film thrown out or destroyed so it doesn't, you know, fall into someone else's hands and see things published. But stuff like that. Now, obviously, I wish I had that. You know, now they have a sponsor for the whoever's doing the champagne. You know, so that's how things have changed. You probably have a cigar sponsor or a goggle sponsor. So things have changed quite a bit. But you do wish you had some of those crazy, you know, bedlam champagne everywhere kind of photos, for sure.
It's funny you mentioned the goggles, because I've seen people mention while watching The Last Dance that having no goggles actually adds to the photo a little bit, seeing the guy's eyes as they celebrate. Do you agree with that?
100%. And being in there and getting waxed many times with champagne. Champagne, it's not something people can relate to. The champagne stings. Your eyes are burning, you know? But it does lend itself to more of of a real moment for sure, you know? And similarly with our cameras in those situations, we've done all kinds of, you know, different testing. You put a housing on it so it doesn't get, you know, wet or destroyed or this and that, but it does, it takes away from the quality of the photo. So literally I go in with two cameras, and in case one gets blasted too much and shut down, you go to the other. But like, you know, you can't really use too many of the protective type covers because it takes away from the quality of the picture.
Mm. Well, you mentioned the NBA worrying about the image they're putting out in terms of celebrations. Has there ever been a moment where you yourself vetted against yourself and you said, you know what, I'm not going to take this photo? Or does it really matter because the NBA would eventually go through them anyways? Was there a scenario out there where you didn't click your finger?
There are different times where you have to make a judgment call. Do you take the picture? Do you not take the picture? To be honest, I've always been very sensitive about the guys with their families and kids and stuff. And, you know, let them have a moment. They're hugging their kids or something, and I literally don't take the picture. Or guys in the locker room eating or something. There are certain things that, for me personally, I don't really – I think it. You have to be smart as to when to, like, just sit back and not do that, you know. And sometimes you do miss moments, but I think in terms of longevity and I'm going to see them again next week or something, you know, it's not really prudent to overstep in those situations.
Having been around the game and the league for so long now, I mean, obviously a lot of players do recognize you and they know obviously your work. Are you ever in a situation where you're taking a photo of a particular player, maybe post-game or even pre-game when they're walking to the through the tunnel there, where they sort of say, hey, Nat, quick, give me that photo so I can put it up on my own social media? Like, do they sort of say, hey, give me access to that photo as quick as you can?
Yes, and that's been a big change in our workflow in the past couple of years. We used to do those, you know, those walk-in shots for the finals or something, all-star game. But now it's pretty much every game. It's become a big part of, you know, what they're wearing. The sneaker popularity has driven a lot of that stuff. Oh, he's wearing, you know, these kicks into the game. He's wearing a watch or something. And, you know, the guys walk by and then I get a text or, hey, when can I get the picture? And I was like, can you focus on the game? I'm working. I get a text from somebody, hey, I'm coming in 10 minutes. Or, you know, can you be ready? And it's just kind of fun. It's a different world. Like, these are 20 somethings now that social media is an entirely different, you know, world. I made a comment the other day. I was speaking to someone about, because we're always at the arenas early, like doing our prep and doing our setup. And I wish I had a picture of, in the old Boston Garden, Larry Bird walking into the arena. It was a old wooden ramp walking up. Oftentimes he had a ball under his arm and Converse sneakers in his other hand. Like, how cool a picture is that I didn't take that picture because he would have walked over and like punched me in the face or something, you know. It's a different world with that kind of stuff, you know. And it's sort of cool. It has opened up a whole new area where literally these guys are on a red carpet before every game. And if they don't want to, that's cool too. Joe Harris from the Nets used to take the subway to games and come in a different door. He's not into it, you know. someone like Kyle Kuzma, like he's like dressed to the nines every time. It's part of his persona, you know. They're into fashion and stuff, so it's cool.
Yeah, that's interesting you talk about Larry Bird. I can't imagine him ever hitting up anyone and saying, quick, you've got to get a photo of me. Look at my best here. But speaking of the Boston Garden, you tweeted not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, about it was that Jordan game, I believe it was when he scored the 63 points, and how the lighting in that arena just made the shots look cooler. You know, it's an older arena, of course. But nowadays, do the arenas have different lighting that affects the way that you have to adjust for the shots that you make? Or is that something now that's pretty much standard across the board?
No, that's a great question, because people often, you know, they look at the older film and say, oh, I want to recreate that look. Yeah. And it's you can't necessarily do that, even with all the, you know, different tools and stuff that we have. And, you know, we can't, when we're shooting for NBA and shooting, like I said earlier, they have a arrangement with Getty Images to license the book. We can't ever manipulate any of the photos. So what you see of ours is literally right out of the camera. You can't Photoshop, you know, or darken this or fix that. So you have to really be on the money right out of the box with that stuff. And different arenas, the lighting is different. Some of those older buildings, Boston Garden, Chicago Stadium, they were, you know, we have strobe lights up in the ceiling, and where they're placed and the distance they are from the court, things like that are vastly different from, you know, say a Staples Center that's a huge cavernous kind of place, you know. Yeah. So they are, each arena is a little bit different. Some look better than others. Those Bulls red uniforms looked good in a lot of places, you know, with the colors of the old Madison Square Garden. You know, the lighting looks different there. A lot of arenas have tried to almost replicate more of a theatrical stage kind of lighting that they have in certain arenas.
Do you have a favorite arena to shoot in now, current arena?
You know, I like the challenge of shooting in all of the different arenas, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I'm based in New York. So I love Barclays Center because that allows you to do some different things with lighting. The Garden, I'll always have a soft spot for the Garden, but I would have to say Barclays and the Garden currently, because I'm there the most now too.
So what about when you go on the road? Because you've traveled a lot through basketball. I saw you in Melbourne just last year. We were out there for the USA-Australia games, and then you went on to China. And, of course, you've been to Europe for the Barcelona Olympics, is one of the more notable ones. So do you try to, like, find out about the environments you'll be shooting in there to see what sort of equipment you need to bring? Or is it like you just sort of turn up and then figure it out once you get there?
A little of both. A lot of times internationally, we're not using, you know, what we call the strobe lights. So you just need to get, which we have in the NBA arenas, you're just trying to get dialed in to the right color temperature and things of that sort in these different arenas. And again, some just by the physical construction of the building, some look different than others. Things like the Olympics now, they do such a good job because everything is driven by TV and stuff. They do such a good job of lighting the buildings that it pretty much always looks nice. Back in the day, some of the buildings were pretty sketchy on some of those European trips and things. You know, you never knew really what to expect.
Speaking of the 92 Olympics, you recently posted a bunch of Team USA candids, you know, like Jordan's drinking a Gatorade, Scotty's kind of tipping his cap, Larry Bird is smiling at the camera. Is there anybody from that dream team who people would be surprised is really personable, really fun to be taking pictures of?
That was just such a unique time because no one really knew what to expect, mm-hmm. you know? And then the guys were together like 5 weeks or something. And it's like one of the things that developed over the course of that time, there was a crazy friendship that developed between Patrick Ewing and Larry Bird. Hmm. For whatever reason, like Bird was a little cooked. His back was really bothering him, you know, and he couldn't physically do what he once could. But he and Patrick hit it off, and Patrick had this reputation of kind of being standoffish or whatever, and he really wasn't. You know, sure. good sense of humor. Everyone knew Barkley was, you know, the class clown, not in a derogatory way, but he was going to speak his mind. He was the one out on the Romulus every night, you know. you get to know the guys, the different personalities of the guys, because you're together for so long, you know. Yeah. So that was, again, as a fan being part of that, it was like you were traveling with the Beatles.
Well, speaking of physically struggling, you mentioned Larry Bird there. Have you ever physically been run into by a player?
Yes. Thankfully, I've never been seriously injured. And more importantly, a player has never been, you know, injured. It's always a little bit of a battle. Me doing my yoga to stay limber, and I'm not 25 years old anymore. But literally, you know, people love basketball shots. There's a lot that goes into it. But we are, you know, they are ridiculous athletes. They don't have a helmet on. You can see their face. You can see their bodies. Like, but physically, we are, you know, 10 feet away from them. So it's pretty tight quarters. You guys have been to the finals and stuff, and you see the crush of people. And NBA is always doing a good job in terms of, you know, addressing, you know, player safety and things as to where, you know, TV cameras and where us photographers are sitting on the baseline and stuff, because there's a fine line there. You don't want to be a danger to the players, but you want to do your job and put these great images out there that show the guys doing what they do.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because any time you see a player kind of take a dive into the stands, it sort of starts that debate again, like maybe the cameras are too close, and is there too many people too close to the action that could cause an injury? You know, are you involved in discussions about that with the league, about, you know, keeping it a safe distance and perhaps even altering it, you know, after an incident happens?
There are always ongoing discussions. Sometimes I'm involved, sometimes not, because the NBA, as you know, is as an organization, is pretty proactive with things of that sort. You know, the players, everyone knows the game is the players, you know, and whether it's us or fans, or, you know, sometimes you see a food service person getting run into, you know, on the sideline or something. They're always evaluating those types of things. And, you know, thankfully, when you think there's 82 games times 30 teams, realistically, the percentages, you don't see stuff happen, you know, too often. And thankfully, you never want to see, you know, someone get hurt.
Guys, time to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a few minutes with more from Nat Butler. If you're bored in the house, why not spend some time on yourself? Our sponsor today, Manscaped, is here to make sure you're well-groomed above and below the belt. Manscaped promotes clean hygiene when it comes to shaving, thanks to their Lawnmower 3.0. Guys, we spend so much time taking care of the top half of our body and making ourselves look nice. Why not spend a few minutes south of the border too? Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0. Precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. This third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. Shaving is about to be nick-free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin-safe technology. And then once you've given yourself a bit of a trim, you can try the Manscaped Crop Preserver, which is an anti-chafing deodorant and moisturizer to finish the job. Subscribe to the Perfect Package and get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months, making sure your trimmer always stays fresh and clean. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code THEATHLETIC. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. So go to manscaped.com today and use the code THEATHLETIC.
Sundays, am I right? Sundays are worse than Mondays in a lot of ways. I mean for other people, not me. I love Sundays these days. Looking down the barrel at a week of talking about a documentary, Survivor, and a random basketball movie? Nah, I'm good with Sundays, or any other day of the week. I'm talking about people who actually work for a living. It's that feeling of anxiety, knowing on Monday, the grind starts up again. It gets under your skin. It can ruin your weekend. And that's no way to tackle the week ahead. Introducing Sunday Scaries, a specifically formulated CBD gummy with vitamins D3 and B12. They're super consumable and easy to take on the go and can help in all sorts of ways. Chilling out, relaxing, chillaxing, decompressing, keeping your composure, concentrating on what matters, quieting your mind, unwinding. And Sunday Scaries recently launched Cabin Scaries to promote social distancing and responsible isolation. A portion of sales will be donated to the Bartender Emergency Assistance Program to help displaced hospitality workers. Get 25% off your first order at sundayscaries.com. Enter No Dunks where it asks for a coupon in the checkout page. Find out what product might be best for you. Go to sundayscaries.com and use code NODUNKS.
Guys, if you were to guess on average how many days people in the U.S. have to wait to see a doctor, what would you say? A week, maybe? Actually, on average, people have to wait around 29 days to see a doctor in major U.S. cities. Basically, a month. If you're dealing with a condition like erectile dysfunction, you want treatment ASAP. That's why our friends at Roman have spent years building a digital platform that can connect you with a doctor licensed in your state, all from the comfort of home. Roman makes it convenient to get the treatment you need on your schedule. Just grab your phone or computer, complete a free online visit, and you'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. And if the doctor decides that treatment is right for you, Roman's Pharmacy can ship your medication to you with free two-day shipping. You also get free unlimited follow-ups with your doctor anytime you have questions or want to adjust your treatment plan. With Roman, there are no commitments and you can cancel anytime. So if you're struggling with ED, go to getroman.com/nodunks for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's getroman.com/nodunks. For a free online visit and free two-day shipping.
As far as right now, you know, with social media, the explosion of social media in the last 5 to 10 years, I mean, everyone's a photographer these days. And, you know, you talked about how your photos aren't touched up at all or photoshopped in any way that go to Getty. But do you feel now, you know, the competition from every single team's social media outlet and people are all trying to clamor around to get the best shot. Is there a feeling that perhaps there's too many people, you know, trying to sort of get in the face and get that that one shot that they're looking for?
Yeah, good question, because I think it's great to have, you know, I did a post not too long ago of, I think it was when MJ came back with the Wizards, like his first time back with the Wizards, it was 2002 or whatever, was the digital was just starting to catch on, and I took a frame of it with a digital camera, and the quality was brutal. And now an iPhone is twice as good as that picture, you know, the quality in, yeah, you know, 2002, which is relatively a short period of time. So I think it's cool. The technology is always cool to me, and it keeps, Like I said, I've been doing this a long time, but that keeps me young and fresh, and I'm always looking for different things. The one thing, you know, without sounding like too much of like an old head, the one thing that has been frustrated, and I'm sure you guys deal with it as well, is a lot of the younger people have not really been brought up through the process, and there's some etiquette involved, you know, that you would learn if you started off slowly and learned some of the professional etiquette. You know, like you guys, I'm sure you deal with someone from a team like jumping in front of you with the microphone in someone's face, like people with a phone jumping in front of us when we're trying to do it. There's a little bit of a, you know, that is lacking. I don't blame them per se, but there is sometimes you can sit back and watch and learn. instead of being thrust into a situation where you don't really have much experience, quite frankly, you know? And I think that's better for everybody. You don't have to do a crush. Stay back a little bit and, you know, give the guy some breathing room. Don't cut in front of the 10 other people that are trying to do their job, that type of thing. You know,
what about image stealing? I mean, when you've got so many great quality photos out there, but anyone can just, you know, screenshot anything and put it up on their own social media channels, and they can get a lot of likes and they can, you know, generate revenue maybe from that as well. I mean, without giving the proper credit, I mean, how does that, how do you feel about that these days? Because, you know, again, on Instagram especially, there are so many fake accounts that just steal video or images from wherever, but they have a huge following.
Right. No, it's funny. There's there's a couple of accounts that probably, you know, more than half or 80% of the shots on their accounts are mine, and they have more followers than I do. And I'm like, hey, yeah, what's wrong with this thing? It's something that I try not to worry about, and I leave that kind of thing to NBA. Can deal if something is negative, and they can perhaps go after some kid who's in his mom's basement posting all of our pictures. I got, to be honest, I was sort of late to Instagram. I was like, yeah, I didn't really pay too much attention to it. And then I started, you know, my account because of the fact I saw a lot of people capitalizing on my work. And then I did originally get a little bit of pushback because I do put a little like Natalie photo watermark on the pictures, not all the time, but most of the time. Mm-hmm. And it's not really to be an ass or anything, but it's just to, like, we work hard to do what we do. If you want to use it or you want to do it, be fine. But, you know, give a little bit of credit to where things originate from. I equate it to, like, if someone steals a tweet from somebody, instead of, you know, calling it a retweet, if they tweet that as their own, like, people would lose their mind, you know? Like, mm-hmm. So why is a photo any different? You know, it's not your photo. Give someone, you know, a little, it boils down to respect. Like I said, I don't want to be an ass about it, but we work hard to do what we do, mm-hmm. you know? And it boils down to a little bit of respect. And I don't, you know, you can't worry about it too much. It is a different world nowadays. So,
and like you mentioned, everybody is a photographer now. Have any players ever approached you for kind of, you know, tips on improving their photography? I remember, like, Kevin Durant was taking pictures at the Super Bowl once upon a time. So certainly there are guys who would do this as a hobby. Are they trying to learn from some of the greatest in the field?
Yeah, it's fun. I typically every year, not this summer by the looks of things, but I always enjoyed doing the basketball with border trips that are typically done over the summer. Have been to Africa and other continents and countries over my time, and the players go, they bring their family, they bring the cameras, and you have more time to spend with them, you know, learning about things. And it's fun for me, you know. Typically, the first thing is like, wow, this is harder than it looks, you know. You guys play basketball, and you make it look easy, and it's harder than it looks too, you know. But it's funny because the guys, some of the guys, they have difficulty with certain cameras because their hands are so big. You know? things you don't think about. Like a nice little camera is great for their wives or something. When they try to hold it, their hands are too big to do the camera. But it's fun because, like, typically those trips, like I said, you get to spend time with the guys and get to know them, and that's typically where something like that develops. Kemba Walker is really into photography. Tyson Chandler did a safari in Africa and came back with beautiful photos, you know. So yes, a lot of the guys are very, very creative, you know, and it's sort of is in that same vein. The guys are creative with the designing of their sneakers. Photography is sort of another outlet. As you know, a couple of the guys are really into music, So it is a little bit of a creative gene there.
Yeah, we've been speaking a lot about MJ smoking his cigars, you know, over these past few weeks. Has MJ's cigar smoke ever ruined a shot of yours, or maybe it's enhanced a shot of yours?
You know what? It's funny. What I do recall, and I am not a smoker or a cigar smoker by any stretch, but whatever he was smoking, it always smelled good. It was a pretty high end. You did not walk into the room and gag from a bad smell. It was like, wow, that smells really nice. Like somebody, whether it was a mod or I'm sure Michael has a few connections, they were smoking some pretty high end cigars because, again, it just smelled really nice.
So he never asked you if you wanted to chomp on a cigar there with him?
You know what? I wouldn't want to embarrass myself and like cough and eyes turn red or whatever, you know. But I think that was like that. Looking back on things, it had to be part of his, like a little bit of his relaxation mode or something, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did.
You know, so talking earlier as well about, you know, when you're in the locker room with the champagne flying and people everywhere and you take two cameras in case one sort of breaks down, how long typically does a camera last before you have to replace it or get a new one, or if just the technology advances to the point where it's time to upgrade?
You know, that's a great question. I personally like baby my equipment like crazy because it's your job, it's your life. And the cameras are not inexpensive, you know. And typically, in the digital world, every 2 or 3 years there are big advancements with the technology in the cameras. So you need it's your job. You do need to stay, you know, on top of things, and you need to be, you know, driving the Ferraris of the cameras, and they're not cheap. Maybe if I get my Instagram followers up a level, and then some of these camera companies want to sponsor me, feel free to reach out to me. I can save a few dollars by not having to upgrade so frequently.
That's smart.
I do wonder with the Instagram account. So you mentioned that sometimes the people do take your work. I wonder. I mean, this isn't necessarily a question, but I wonder if the NBA does report it immediately to the social platforms, or does the NBA look at those platforms or those accounts as positive for the league because it's only promoting the league? I know it's negative from your perspective, but I sort of liken it to back to the fact of the NBA was sort of on the forefront of allowing us fans to record their televisions and put it up, put videos of games up on social media platforms, while other leagues like the NFL was adamant about taking them down. Do you have any knowledge of that and how that works?
You know what? Not specifically, but agree with you in the general terms. The NBA, I think, when I was first starting in the, you know, in the 80s and stuff, like David Stern was like a control freak, and you're putting out a certain image, you're putting out a certain product, as I alluded to before with the champagne type stuff. 100% get that. Now you fast forward 25, 30 years later, and it's not necessarily any publicity is good publicity. I don't subscribe to that because I'm not interested in something negative getting a lot of mm-hmm. likes or hits or whatever. But the NBA is very savvy in their marketing, and like I said earlier, if players are asking for photos, we give players photos, and then the players push it out on their platforms. That benefits everyone, you know. Right. I think some of these other accounts, like it is promoting the NBA, which is a good thing. I think they would crack down if there was a, you know, if there was a quote unquote repeat offender that was doing something negative. I don't want to speak on behalf of, you know, NBA, but I would have to think that if there was something negative that was, like I said, a repeat offender, they would address that as they should, you know. but players putting stuff out. And even now during this quarantine time, the NBA players are so active on social media, and they're very savvy. And I think it's cool for the fans to get to, you know, relate to them. They're human beings just like everyone else. You know, there are guys homeschooling their kids. There are guys, it was shocking to me, guys didn't have basketball hoops to work mm-hmm. out with. You know, they're human beings like everyone else. And I think that the fans love being able to relate to the players like that.
Nat, before we wrap up here, you know, all we've been talking about is you being behind the camera, but there's one photo on your Instagram account where you're actually in the photo, and I think it's a pretty special one because it's the time you met Nelson Mandela. Can you just talk to us about what happened there and how that came about, and if he, you know, had any idea of what you did, or if you showed him some of your work?
That was probably, you know, my most memorable NBA experience for all of the obvious reasons. It was a small contingent of NBA players and staff that went over to Johannesburg, and it was before he had just been released from prison a year before, and he was being prepared for the presidency. And he invited the NBA group to his house for dinner. And it wasn't like 50 people. It was like, I'm talking 10 or 12 people. And I just had chills the entire night, you know? And it will always be very special. He was a huge sports fan. You know, people said he boxed in prison to stay in shape. He was in incredible shape. He knew basketball, which was remarkable. And then the crazy thing was, he was very generous. I was taking people's photos with him. And then at the end, he was like, it's your turn. And I was like, I'm looking over my shoulder. Who is he speaking to? And he goes, no, you. And I was like, oh, I've never, like, I have to be honest, I've never had my picture taken with Michael, Larry, Magic, any of those guys over the years. And I handed my camera off to this guy who was not a photographer, and I was praying, well, please don't press this button. We'll hope for the best, you know? And it was literally, probably, you know, obviously one of the highlights of my professional career was be able to meet him. And again, with my job, I'm oftentimes fortunate to be a fly on the wall. You do take a couple of, but then I'm hearing him speak, I'm hearing him interact with people, and things like that are truly special to me, whether it's that the players on a bus going to a game, or we did a thing this past All-Star when Barack Obama came to an NBA Cares event. You know, just listening to them and being around people like that is just so inspiring to me. And so after the picture with Mandela, I was like, okay, I'm good. I don't need to ask Michael, Larry, Zion. I'm good. If you're going to have one photo, I think that's the one. And it just has been remarkable to me. And like I said, pretty much go back to the continent every summer, and have been fortunate to have been all over the African continent because it has been so special to me.
Well, yeah, there could be a whole new Instagram page of just Nat photo selfies, really, with everyone. Maybe you could start that up, as you know.
Yeah, it's not my thing. I'll stay on the other side of the camera, like a little heavy, or I have the quarantine beard going now. by the way, is a little whiter than I would have thought. It pretty much, it's not David Letterman-esque, but it's pretty damn white. And I'm like, wow, I got to shave this before I go out in public.
Yeah, I think we've all got something like that.
I was going to make fun of Trey and his beard, but I don't know.
Yeah, mine came out a lot whiter than I was expecting, too. My wife the other day was like, you just have white hair now. So I guess that's right.
Right.
Well, Nat, it's been really awesome listening to your stories today. It's been a lot of fun for all of us, and I can speak for the rest of the guys at your work. We really admire and respect it, and it did hang up on the starters' walls there at the NBA TV studios, and a lot of it actually hung up my bedroom walls as well. Growing up as a kid, there was a lot of posters. I remember Nathaniel S. Butler photos and Andy Bernstein as well. Those two, you guys. Yeah, the hoop magazines. It was always one of you two guys who would get the poster, and that would always go straight up on my bedroom wall. So to talk to you about some of your memories today has been fantastic.
Thanks for having me, guys, and hopefully we'll get to see you soon if and when we can resume here, and a little bit of a different calendar schedule. But I'm still holding out hope that we'll have some playoffs and finals happening this year.
Yes, it's hard to tell really what's going to happen there. Some days it looks like maybe we will, and other days it seems like we might be sitting in this sort of environment for another 6 months or so. But
right,
who knows?
Right.
Hopefully everyone, you know, can follow the advice of the medical experts, and we can kick this thing. But for more awesome photos of Nat, you can follow him on Twitter and Instagram. It's Nat Ly Photo. That's Nat Ly Photo on both. And check out some of his incredible work over the years.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. It's been fun. And like I said, hope to see you soon.